This podcast is about eating a spoonful of radioactive sugar, and that sugar goes to your cancer and covers your cancer with radioactive sugar. And as the sugar decays, it produces antimatter, and this antimatter produces a special light which can be detected and makes your tumor or cancer or your sickness, depending on how we do it, glow in three dimensions, a beautiful three dimension, which then transfers to the doctor's computer and say, ha ha, I can hopefully treat this patient. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. I suppose, podcasting at the moment just to get at my skill in explaining things, to get back into the classroom eventually. I've had my round two heart operation, and so hopefully improving. On this topic, I just want to talk about the production of antimatter, or a way to get antimatter produced inside you. And then I'll follow that right up to the image. So the formation of the image is called PET, positron electron tomography. Positron is the antimatter twin of an electron. So it's an electron travelling backwards in time. Its symbol is E with a bar on top of it to say that it's a positive electron. So it's bar, E, and a little plus sometimes if you want to put the sign above it. And this is produced inside the nuclei of atoms, unstable nuclei of atoms. Sorry, I have to copy you. For which we have arranged too many protons. So there are too many protons, and so the nuclei can rearrange itself by or stabilize itself by reducing its energy of reducing its energy by converting a proton into a neutron. So the way that this goes is a proton is two up and one down quark. So an up quark is got a charge of plus 2/3, and a down quark has a charge of minus 1/3. So what happens is a proton is 2/3 plus 2/3 minus 1/3 is 1, because it's a charge of plus 1. A neutron is an up quark, 2/3, and two down quarks, 2 minus 1/3. It's got an overall charge of 0. And so in this nuclear decay, a nucleus with too many protons will actually decay by converting one of its protons into a neutron and emitting a positron, which is E bar with a little plus size, and a actual neutrino. If it was to do something else, like produce a electron, it would also produce an antineutrino. So it actually produces an electron neutrino, and this streams away. And that neutrino, by some other laws of physics, will just travel through the entire Earth, not interacting with anything. It's a very light little particle. It's a little baby particle. In fact, it was detected as a missing thing by looking at beta decay, which is nuclear decay, and looking at the energy of electrons out, they realised that there was another particle involved, a little neutral one, named by Fermi. Neutrino is a... Bambino is an Italianised name of neutral, the little neutral one. So let's get back to it. So essentially, we have to generate these rich nuclei and somehow feed them to you. Now, sort of the other aspect to it is that I suppose you can get some long lifetime positron emitters, and we'll go into the decay a little bit further down the track. But firstly, we're talking about making a nucleus artificially, making a nucleus with too many positrons, protons inside it. So what happens is you have a nucleus with too many protons. The proton turns into a neutron with the emission of a positron, a positive electron, a positive anti-electron, and a neutrino. So that's what we have to aim to try and get. If I sound a little bit uncoordinated, I'm just doing this straight off the top of my head. So we're at the stage that we want to produce, get ordinary matter, and do something to it to actually produce radioisotopes which have got too many protons on it, and that too many protons will mean that will adjust itself by turning that proton into a neutron, that is keeping the isotopic weight, but the atomic number will drop by one as that proton. The number of protons is equal to the atomic number. That will drop by one with the emission of a positron. And we'll talk about the emission of a positron and how that can be actually used sleuthfully to actually illuminate your cancer in three dimension. So we have to come up with a scheme of... firstly, we don't want extremely long life radionuclei source. So if it's got a half-life of, say, 10 years, and we're only going to measure you for 1 day, we have to load you up with the number of days in 10 years worth of radionuclei, and you will irradiate for 10 years for 1 day's youth. So essentially we want to have the radio half-life of these radionucleides underneath a day, and that's actually quite easy to do. So if you can imagine, you want to make it hot, a high emission source with a short half-life, and get it into the patient, get them to irradiate, and get them finished and out. You want to actually have the irradiation happening fairly quickly, such that it's used, the radiation load on the patient is equal to the beneficial diagnostic load. So you don't want to have them radiating too much when they're not in a machine. So the way to do that is to get a relatively short half-life radionuclide into a person, measure them, and so that your measurement is taking a significant fraction of that half-life. And now, I just have to go off the top of my head. So if you've got, if you can make something with a half-life of 20 minutes, that's has to be actually made there at the hospital. So you could make the radionuclide at a central facility, but that means that if it's made at that central facility in a city, and it's got a half-life of 20 minutes, essentially you're really, if you've got to actually get it to a hospital 40 minutes away, you have to produce, essentially 8 times higher than you would if you had the actual radiation production source at the hospital. So we'll talk about how you produce these nuclei. So you've got these short-term, basically it's got a general rule that the lighter the element, the shorter the lifetime is. So you can get a lifetime of several hours if you go up to, I think it's gallium, rubidium, some of the higher ones that you can use, more exotic ones. And the so let's go through the different radionuclei that you can use. I'm just trying to think of it in my head. Carbon 11. So you can use carbon, oxygen, nitrogen, fluorine, and then I think there's gallium, rubidium. There's a few other ones up there. And so the carbon 11 is one that you can make. And I'm just trying to think how you. Oh yes, yeah. So you make these various wines by different techniques, but the ones before fluorine have to actually be made in situ in the hospital. Fluorine is one which you can make in a central one in the city and fly it out to different sections because it's got a longer lifetime around it, or a bit over an hour. I'll have to do it. I'm just going off the top of my head. The other ones are made, rubidium and gallium are made by a radioactive process in which that's in a radioactive chain, so you can actually store the parent element and actually milk it. You can have a machine and milk it and feed it into the patient as required. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. Carbon 11 is, I was trying to think, carbon 12. Essentially, you get a target, a nitrogen target, I think that's it. Let's see, carbon, nitrogen, no, an oxygen target. No, I'm just trying to get in my head. It will be a nitrogen target. So what happens is that you have some nitrogen and you fire a proton into that nitrogen, and this is accelerate a proton up at high speed. A proton has got a plus charge, and accelerate it such that it hits a nitrogen nucleus. And so let's see, 11 plus, carbon 11. I just got to go through my head ahead in that. So carbon 11 is got an extra proton in it, so it was carbon 10, but it will be nitrogen 14. So nitrogen 14 gets hit with a proton. We'll talk about how you get this proton coming in. The proton ejects an alpha particle, so that drops down to, it drops down 4, but it's a bit like billiards, stuff like that. When you hit, it fires out one, but fires out the alpha particle, but retains the proton, and this produces carbon 11, which is incorporated in a drug and then fed to someone. Now, we'll just talk about the how you get a compact accelerator. So a linear accelerator is. We'll just talk about the acceleration of a proton. So you have hydrogen gas, and you get a beam of protons, and you have to arrange it such that as the pulse of protons that you produce approach an electrode, that electrode is negative, and as the particles pass that electrode switches at radio frequency to positive. And so what happens is that your electrode in your gas tube is pulling your protons towards it, and as the protons approach it, it changes sign, all done with electronics, and starts to push. So your electrodes in your linear accelerator are positioned such that they change sign to accelerate your proton. And so protons which are of the wrong energy or too slow, too fast, get pushed, don't get accelerated. And so you get this bunch of protons. And you can fine-tune this to a resonance such that when it hits your target, you get a very high yield of conversion. So you're converting nitrogen 14 to carbon 11, and this carbon 11 has, as far as the carbon's concerned, too many protons, and so that proton will turn into a neutron, so you'll get boron 11 produced, and a positron. So that's a linear accelerator. That's obviously something that you can't have in a hospital. So they've got a curved linear accelerator. That is an accelerator in this huge uniform magnetic field called a cyclotron. So the cyclotron is basically two D shapes where the protons go in a curve. So they have centripetal force when they have a magnetic field on it. So they go in a curve and you have plates down the center. So you can imagine in your head, a capital C and D. And so the C, a gap, and the D section of it. We get the straight line. And so the protons start life off in the center. They get fired injected into this device, and then they go around, and you have it when it hits the plates. The plates going in the non-magnetic field section of it. It always sees a positive plate towards it, behind it, and a negative plate in front of it. Now, what happens is that this keeps on going around, and the proton beam spirals around. The faster it goes, the larger its radius of curvature, but it still takes the same time. So you can have the frequency of these plates such that it always accelerates these protons up, and so in a fairly compact but fairly heavy looking device, I'd suppose it'd be the size of a small car. I've seen a few of these things, beautiful magnetic fields. This is before superconducting magnets, the ones I've seen before superconducting magnets, and these little D plates. And so you've got two, it's a sort of a linear accelerator which is coiled up. It's a fairly brilliant design, designed by the US in World War II to isolate or separate uranium isotopes. So this accelerates the proton around, and so you always have this system with these devices that you a resonance. Now, if you hit a nucleus really hard in the wrong way, it just shatters, it splatulates, you just get rubbish everywhere. But if you've got something at the right frequency, it will do a billion thing. And so with a very light nucleus, the proton will come in, slam into it, having accelerated through this. So each it's called cyclotron frequency for the magnetic field, will have a certain frequency. The frequency of the plates means that it's always when the proton beam goes into this acceleration space, it always sees a negative charge in front of it and a positive charge behind it pushing it. It's like pushing it along. It's a bit like a Salem track where you can actually, or people in a roundabout where you can actually get in there and actually just push them along it the right way when the handle comes past you. So this process has got a conservation of momentum, and with the carbon 11 version from nitrogen, the proton comes in and knocks out a alpha particle. So and essentially, when it knocks out an alpha particle, it knocks out an equal number of protons and neutrons. And so the result, so you shoot out the alpha particles and the proton stays put. So that leaves basically a proton in excess in your ratio. You've knocked out two protons and two neutrons and replaced it with one proton. You've increased the proton richness of it, so it will tend to beta decay. Fluorine is the one of preference used in Australia a lot, and that's produced by a pure oxygen 18 isotope, oxygen-18. It's actually very interesting to see how that's formed in stars. I won't go into that stage. Oxygen-16 is the normal isotope of oxygen, having 8 protons and 8 neutrons. That's oxygen-16. Oxygen-18 is a normally highly stable isotope of oxygen. And you can actually get pure oxygen-18 water. You can actually have double heavy water, which is used in other medical applications with deuterium and oxygen-18. So oxygen-18 is a reasonably common isotope of oxygen. And you hit this with a proton beam in your synchrotron. I think Australia's got 2 synchrotrons in Sydney and other synchrotrons in various hospitals produce radioisotopes. So fluorine's the one with, going off the top of my head, 110 minutes. I don't know. Look, I've only read it once or heard it once, so I'm not sure whether it's how much that's stuck in my head. But the proton comes along, slams into oxygen-18, and in this case, it doesn't knock out an alpha particle, it knocks out a single neutron. So you get fluorine-18. That is the same number of nucleons, but one of the nucleons have been converted into or displaced by a proton. And now, over time, that proton will undergo decay into a neutron, producing a positron and a neutrino. So there's other isotopes which are made in different techniques further up the periodic table, longer lifetime. But fluorine-18 is the standard one, which we mix with sugar and feed to things which bind to the surface of your cancer. So this is prepared. Fluorine is a fairly active chemical. I think you can just wash it out with an acid, bind it quite easily to a sugar, a fluorinated sugar, feed the sugar to you. So this is made in a sugar, I think at Lucas Heights, shipped out to people, and people are fed this little sugar pill. Could be injected into you, but it really more depends. Probably injected into you. I was thinking if it goes into your stomach, that would diffuse. It'd take a long time to when that actually bound. Glucose is something which is used in your blood cells more directly. Okay, so that's fit to you. And you will begin to glow with antimatter annihilation. And let's talk about antimatter, or what actually matter is. Matter and antimatter is made by 2 light beams coming together in a very concentrated amount of space and becoming locked together. So light doesn't experience time, but if you have 2 light beams, intense light beams, in this case 511 EV light beams come into each other, they will lock together and produce an electron and a positron, which will actually, the electron will travel forward in time, the positron will travel backwards in time. So we sort of know this is how matter is made. Matter is made from space and light. So if you get matter and antimatter, the two will collide, annihilate each other, and release some space. The mass will disappear, and light will emit from it. So your little cancer will be coated, sugar-coated cancer, and it will start to produce these annihilation radiation. Now, the annihilation radiation has to conserve momentum, so the beams come out roughly 180 degrees to each other. There's a bit of dynamics, which means that the angles are not exactly exactly correct. And so if you surround someone with a ring of detectors, your cancer will light up as a lighthouse. And so when there's this decay, you will suddenly have a decay, say, at 0 degrees and 180 degrees, or 30 degrees and 210 degrees electron, these gamma rays. Now, I would assume that there'd be polarization would be limited. It's also interesting that so you're inside this ring of detectors, but you're a big three-dimensional object. So I think modern detectors are coming such that they're so fast that they can actually locate the cord with which the radiation came from and the position along the cord, and produce pretty much an instantaneous 3D diagram of it. So this is of your cancer cell. So you will get these coincidences in angle and time. I think in the future ones, we've got greater detection rates. Of course, these detectors can be tuned specifically to only detect these specific gamma rays, so it can eliminate all background. So you've got a whole lot of things going into it. So we can actually feed you radioactive stuff, which produces its radioactive decay, produces antimatter. The antimatter produces twin gamma rays can be simultaneously detected, and the actual position in space can be produced, and so you can get a beautiful three-dimensional picture of the actual chemical reaction. So you can have PET scans inside the brain if someone's concentrating on something. This is the early before we had such great things as functional magnetic resonance imaging, before that things began to go so fast. But you can pick up cancers, and I think for rubidium, I just have to think, rubidium 58, I really can't remember. Rubidium is very much like potassium. So there are these other ones which you can actually antimatter. So we've got a whole slew of chemicals radionuclei which produce positrons, and they interact, can be used to interact in different ways. So the fluorine can be bound to sugar, and the sugar can be bound to cancers. Cancers tend to be active, they're out of control, they're not speaking to everybody else's, to your own system. They're interested in producing their cancer, so they tend to produce, metabolize more quickly, and you can actually put enzymes in with it to take the sugar to the cancer. But rubidium is like a metal, similar to potassium, so that can be used, or theoretically used, I don't know whether it is actually used, in lieu of potassium channels in your heart. And so this can actually really give you a good three-dimensional image as to how much potassium and how much work your heart is doing, some great diagnostics. So that's the future as it is. Again, I'm just doing this as a practice podcast, just to get all the information in your head, just off the top of your head. Just sit down and just do a podcast off the top of your head. So thanks for listening, and I hope if you listen, you'll be able to place this all together, sort of look up various articles. So just go ahead. There's one, summarise again, there's one very large piece of equipment called a cyclotron, the size of a family car, really thick, heavy magnets, and this whirls around a proton beam, which displaces, embeds itself in a nucleus, creating a proton overly rich nucleus, which will eventually decay into a positron. And that positron will mix with an electron in your body and produce 2 5 11 eV rays going in roughly 180 degrees, which can actually be used with a detector. So the other thing we have to say is that you are gowned up. I would think it would be injected to you rather than given as a sugar pill. And then you put in this ring machine, a PET machine, which is a large donut machine, which has got an array of gamma ray detectors with exquisite timing. The timing is so precise that it can pick up coincidences. So one annihilation will produce 2 gamma rays. And so by looking at the arrival time and the angle, it can actually determine where the annihilation has occurred. And by using clever chemistry, we can actually bind that annihilation to a cancer site or some a bone break site, for instance. So I think there's a strontium version where the actual chemicals are used. So where the body is, will say, yum, some chemicals, I need a lot of it, and they'll use it at a wound site or a distress site. And so this can be used to produce a beautiful 3D picture. It's rather interesting that rather than an X-ray machine, the actual X-rays or gamma rays are actually inside you. Just a closing point is that gamma rays are nice. The sort of worst radiation is radiation which starts off and deposits all its energy inside you. And so this is saying that the smaller you are, the thinner you are, the better the this PET is. The bigger you are, there's more of your body to absorb these gamma rays. Now, these gamma rays, I think, will go through a fair number of people. Just put you on the other edge. One of the things they do with X-ray machines, suddenly make them much more healthy, is that they used to take all X-rays and just shine them at you. And what happened is that you could actually increase the amount of X-rays coming out by putting something equivalent to a piece of flesh in front of the X-ray machine, which absorbs the soft X-rays. This lump of flesh was absorbing all the low-use X-rays and absorbing all that and releasing the higher, harder X-rays. So the X-rays that you use today have got a reasonably good penetration. You don't want an X-ray which only penetrates into 1 centimetre of your flesh, because that just really means all the energy has just been deposited in your flesh and not used for imaging. So similarly here, PET sources have a very low radioactive load on you, because the radiation is such that the actual energy of the gamma rays go all the way through you, and they can actually go through, if you're relatively small, they can actually go for a great distance. They have special, I think it would be I can remember one project where they were using ionization detectors, but I would think now PET would use some sort of crystal scintillation. So crystal scintillation is where a crystal glows and you use a quick light detector to detect it. Okay, that's all. Thanks for listening.